Athletic.
Hello again and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne, your twice weekly Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic. My name's Taylor Payne and sadly there's no AI Culkin today. An immediate favourite with the listeners, that one, but we've been forced to sub in his human counterpart. So welcome back to the show, star of the Amazon Prime documentary We Are Newcastle United, podcaster number two, also known as Man, George Culkin. Hello George, how are you?
That's a lot to take in one intro.
It is definitely you, isn't it? I'm not talking to a computer or a machine.
I don't think so. Definitely you. No, I don't think so.
Good.
Yeah, I'm okay. I've got that slight mix of irritation and grumpiness.
I can tell.
Which is usual, you know, pretty usual for me on a Monday morning.
Yeah.
But trying to get to grips with what we saw yesterday. Yeah, sorry not to be around last week. I had a busy week, but we'll be around for both shows this week. So you've got the real me.
Outstanding.
100% Culkin.
Excellent. And Chris Wolf's here as well. Chris, how the devil are you?
Yes, I'm similar to George, still sort of reeling from yesterday. It was a bit of a sort of flashback for me yesterday because I actually sat in my former season ticket seat for the first time in nearly a decade. That was in the Gallagher end towards the front left corner. So you get a very different perspective there. And also, John, a.k.a. when I was sort of young and first started going to the game and didn't know his name and referred to him as Earring Man, turned to me after Liverpool's second goal went in and said, "Get back up to the stands, you're not allowed to sit here anymore." Which seemed very fair.
Let's have visions of everyone watching you walk down the aisle going, "Oh, not him again, he's back."
Did you enjoy it though, Chris? I mean, I know you didn't enjoy the result, but how did you find being back there again?
I did enjoy it. It is a very different sort of experience. Obviously, the perspective on the game, you're lower down, you're only seeing it from one side, and then also being immersed within the crowd. I mean, there's a guy now who sits a few rows behind who, all the way through, for a good 10 minutes, just sits there and goes, "Black and white army, black and white army," hoping everyone else is going to sing "Toon Toon" and they don't. So he just goes, "Black and white army." So those little quirks.
Did you join it?
No, I didn't. I didn't join in. I was very
part of the problem then, aren't you, Chris?
I know exactly. I'm part of the issue.
Sitting your backside in the second half when the team needed a lift. You are the problem, Chris. I've always thought this, as you well know, but you are the problem.
All right, let's not get bogged down with this nonsense too early. Right. We've got a lot to get through today.
We do.
We're going to have a little chat about that Liverpool game.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. Yeah. I've come to talk with you again.
I nearly posted that on X, formerly known as Twitter, yesterday, but it was familiar. It was a familiarity to it. To the sheer fuck-uppery. Which is maybe a bit harsh, I don't know.
That is exactly what was going through my head as I walked out of the ground with my head down.
Yeah, but I have to say, I was sort of trying to put this in the context of Newcastle defeats since Eddie Howe came in as manager. And obviously there was the sort of disappointing start. And I can't really think of many. I mean, there's been games where Newcastle have been beaten and been deservedly beaten, but I can't think of many matches like this where you would say it's on them that they've lost in quite such dramatic fashion. Anyway, there's lots to get through, but yeah.
There is.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, it was a whirlwind start of the game, wasn't it? Featuring referee John Brooks quite heavily. That intense 5 minutes with red cards and goals and all sorts of stuff and possible sending off for Trent. What happened there? It was just madness, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, it was actually a whirlwind start, but in the middle of the pitch, because I don't think Newcastle actually had a proper shot until the 15th minute, but they had so much intensity around the rest of the field and put Liverpool under a lot of pressure. And Liverpool, I think, only had the header that flashed wide from, I don't know if it was a Matip or whoever.
Yeah.
But in the middle of the pitch, Newcastle just seemed quicker. Anthony Gordon, from the very first minute, was causing problems for Liverpool. He probably did foul Alexander-Arnold to sort of knock him off the pitch, and then Alexander-Arnold responded by throwing the ball away, sort of stopping Newcastle, maybe taking a quick throw in, and he gets booked for that, which I think they probably saw as an injustice because he felt he should have had a free kick. That wasn't given. He was then given a yellow card. And then Anthony Gordon picks the ball up inside, basically in the corner I was sitting, the Gallagher corner, and manages to run beyond the first tackle, gets towards where Alexander-Arnold is, and he just sticks out an arm and like drags him back. Clear professional foul. Any other point in the game, particularly if he hasn't already had a yellow card, that's a clear yellow card.
It's a forearm to the neck. I mean, that is such an obvious yellow, that one.
The ref's bottled that a bit, hasn't he?
He has. I mean, he's got himself in a hole because, as I said, he probably should have given a foul against Gordon before Alexander-Arnold did the, and then Alexander-Arnold petulantly responds and gets a yellow card for it. But he's already got himself in that position. It clearly is a yellow card. There's no way that it isn't. But I thought he almost overcompensated later because there was a couple of times where Joe Linton did a couple of professional fouls, clearly dragging people back through the middle, and it was almost as if he's like, I didn't book Alexander-Arnold, so yeah. I can't book Joe Linton for it as well. So it was he sort of was then overcompensating for that, and it was from the very first minute. I think that the referee sort of got a little bit caught up in the intensity, doubted himself a couple of times, and although he got a couple of big calls right later on, particularly with the red card, I feel was, but that was it was just a difficult film, and really that there should have been down to 10 men far sooner than there were.
And George, as well, perceived injustices like that do nothing but make Newcastle United's chances even better with a raucous atmosphere inside St James's Park. Everyone was bang up for it when they thought they'd been wronged by the ref.
Oh, totally, yeah. And, you know, looking at the bigger picture, taking a step back, you have to say, you know, absolutely brilliant atmosphere at kickoff.
Oh, it was amazing.
In the early parts of the match. And until pretty late on, you're watching that match, you're trying to take a step back and think of, you know, how it would be for a neutral to be watching that. And of course, you know, none of us are neutral. But it was a really good game. It was a fantastic game. And to hear Liverpool afterwards, you know, Jurgen Klopp to say, never in 1,000 games in coaching and management have I seen a game like this. Obviously, he's talking about Liverpool's comeback. Trent Alexander-Arnold calls it a performance for the ages. And again, I know those sort of descriptions hurt, but to take a step back, we did witness a pretty sort of remarkable game of football. And for long moments, Newcastle were the better team. They were definitely the better team, 11 versus 11.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, just couldn't keep that going afterwards. But it was one of those kind of weird, weird afternoons where the sort of atmosphere dissipates because the sting had been taken out of the game with the red card and the goal, and it kind of drifts away from Newcastle. But the start was extraordinary, and it was high octane. It wasn't 100 miles an hour, it was 1,000 miles an hour. That part of it was brilliant, was really good.
And Chris, Anthony Gordon was a big plus on the day for Newcastle, wasn't he? Absolutely superb performance from minute one until the minute he came off. He tortured Trent Alexander-Arnold, and he twisted him inside out. And I think it was telling that Trent was already on a yellow card because it just meant Gordon could have all the fun with him, basically, and just turned him left and right all game.
Yeah, and I think before Van Dijk was sent off, I think Klopp and Alexander-Arnold had almost exchanged a few words, and I think that Gomez was warming up at that stage and it almost looked like he was considering maybe hooking Alexander-Arnold because of how difficult it was, and he did look like a walking red card at that stage. As I say, he should have been off, and it seemed that he was going to pull Gordon back at some stage again, because Gordon was just very direct, kept trying to go on the outside, then would cut in and go on the inside and cause problems there. Put a few good early balls into the box, then takes his goal so well. I mean, again, it's an absolute nightmare from Alexander-Arnold. Salah passes him the ball back. He doesn't control it. Gordon's clean through on goal. And afterwards, it was interesting to listen to his NUFC TV interview, and he basically said, in the past, because I'm so intense in terms of what I try to do on the pitch, I rush things sometimes, and what I've been working on is getting through on goal and trying to be sort of ice cool. And you can also, if you watch your back, he almost sets himself ready.
Yeah,
the defence is almost covering back in, but he's made sure he's given himself that time, puts it through Alisson's legs, and he thoroughly deserved that goal. I thought he was Newcastle's man of the match by some distance in terms of the problems he caused. Very direct, just seems full of self-belief. And this is the player Newcastle were hoping they were signing to bring out in him. This is the player who Chelsea really put a big effort into trying to sign last summer. Lots of other clubs also looked at him because the raw talent, the raw ingredients are there. And if he can develop this going on, Newcastle do look like they've got a special talent on their hands.
Absolutely. And George, the red card, we've said already, it completely changed the game, didn't it? Not too many arguments from Reds post-game, although Virgil doesn't exactly make a beeline for the stands, does he, after his marching orders? He hangs around for a bit to argue his case. But when you watch the replay back, I mean, he's through on goal. It's a red card. He takes his legs.
Yeah, I thought that was, you know, very disrespectful. Obviously, there had to be a VAR check, and there was, so it was totally fine for him to hang around for that. But, yeah, from certainly one of the angles, I mean, I think on Match of the Day 2 last night, Mika Richards says it took him a long time to sort of come to the kind of conclusion that that was a red card and a foul and all the rest of it. But when you see the front on angle to the tackle, you see that A, he takes Isak's leg away, then hits the ball very hard, but he completely and utterly wipes him out. And I think from that angle, once you've seen that, it's a clear red card, clear foul. And yeah, he did hang around. It's okay. It's totally fine for him to hang around while they do the VAR check. But his response to the referee was out of order, wasn't professional, and it was disrespectful. And, you know, I'm not drawing a kind of direct line between this, but there is a new charter on participant behaviour that's been kind of released by football's governing bodies this season. And the thing that's been highlighted, of course, is the technical area and things like that. And Jurgen Klopp made jokes about Howe and Tindall on the touchline, saying that's been done for one club. And when Newcastle's bench protested at that moment that there'd been the Trent Alexander foul on Anthony Gordon, the first thing that Klopp does is wheel towards the Newcastle bench and the fourth official. Oh no, get back, they're coming forward, and all the rest of it. Totally fine, albeit, you know, when Liverpool scored their two late goals, Liverpool's bench clears and comes forward into the technical area and celebrate. I mean, what I'm trying to say is that, like, people have to be allowed to sort of be angry or cross or excited or happy or whatever in those moments. But Van Dijk's behaviour was bang out of order. There was absolutely no respect shown to the referee. And Jurgen Klopp is the first one to get into the fourth official's ear during matches. So anyway, yeah, that was just a point that I wanted to make. There's a lot of hypocrisy around about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, just jumping on the back of that, I mean, and this is not meaning to make it personal, but I do think that Van Dijk has that air of sort of superiority about him, as if, like, I feel that that's the way that he sometimes conducts himself, and I thought that that's the way that he dealt with the referees, if to say, how could I have made a mistake like that? How could it be a red card? It was me. I didn't really get Mika Richards' explanation. I also didn't really get Gary Lineker on social media. I'm usually the one who tries to look the other way. It's like, you can argue whether it's a red card, because you can argue whether it's a goalscoring opportunity to an extent, but it's a definite foul. Yeah. He goes through the back of him to win the ball. There's absolutely no doubt. Maybe 20 years ago it wasn't, but nowadays it is. And Alexander Isak's going through into the penalty area, maybe slightly wide, but I think it is a red card, but there's absolutely no doubt that it's a foul. So therefore, I just can't really understand all of this. It took me 50 views to look at it. It's like, if that was in the middle of the pitch and he wasn't clean through on goal, everyone would be seeing it's a foul. It's just because it's that sort of high pressure situation. So I didn't really understand all of the was it not a foul. It was a definite foul. It's just, you can then maybe debate whether it was a red card or not.
And the game does change as soon as the red card happens. Newcastle are playing against 10 men, and it's the old cliche, isn't it? Sometimes it is harder to play against 10 men than it is 11, but you would expect space to open up, and Newcastle just didn't deal with it properly. Here's a little bit from Eddie Howe in the post-game press conference about how the game changed playing against 10 men.
Well, I think it's that, of course, they then restrict space, defend deep, they're content to let you have the ball, and it was our job then to try and create the momentum to win the match and open them up. We didn't do it at will, we didn't do it regularly enough, but we still had our chances, that they were still there, the moments were still there for us to kill the game, and ultimately we didn't take them, and that's why we sit here with a defeat.
I think, I mean, so it is always fascinating because everybody says it, and it is a cliche, as you said, Taylor, but both managers said it. You know, Liverpool were better with 10 men than they were with 11. I thought Newcastle were by far the better side, 11 versus 11, and then the sending off and goal changes it. And I think the interesting thing was, I mean, I have actually watched the game back. I am the new Eddie Howe. I'm big on tactics and big on formations, as you know. And what
this is AI Corgan.
And what it
we've not got the right one.
what it did, I think, is that it actually suddenly gives Liverpool a focus.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't think they'd had that focus. I don't think they had, you know, I'm not saying they didn't have a tactical plan, I'm sure they did, but it gives them a very clear single purpose for what they have to do. And I think Newcastle lost focus. And I think part of this, I mean, it's really irritating and it's frustrating, and we'll come on to the substitutes and things like that. But I do think part of it is human nature, because I think at 1-0 up and against 10 men, the natural thing is to think you've done the hard bit and now you've won the game. Effectively, you've won the game. And, you know, I know that's not...
A bit of complacency, you know, basically.
Eddie Howe would, you know, would be furious at that sort of suggestion.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think Newcastle lost their way. And I don't think... I think there was that thing, is like, if we just keep doing what we're doing, we'll get a second goal. And everything that sort of Liverpool touched from that point turned to gold, pretty much. And nothing Newcastle did could get that sort of momentum back. And I sometimes think when you've got that clarity of purpose that Liverpool had from that point, it's actually becomes quite helpful. You know, there's only one thing they can do, that's shore things up and then attack on the break, and they did it brilliantly.
I agree with you on the clarity of purpose, and I do agree with you about Newcastle losing the way. I don't quite agree with the complacency thing. I don't think it was that Newcastle had become complacent. I thought it was they didn't know whether to stick or twist in terms of Liverpool's... What is Liverpool's strength, and what's the main way they're going to win the game? It's on the counter-attack, and you can see that there was almost... And Howe referenced it after the game to a certain extent when he said he didn't think they were positive enough in the passing. And I thought too often Newcastle went sideways with their passing, particularly across the back line, and it was almost as if, that's a bit of a risky pass. If we give it away, Mo Salah could run through here.
Yeah.
And particularly once their substitutes came on. I mean, I was astounded he didn't start Jota, because I thought Jota made a wonderful impact for them. And I know it's because he won. Yeah. I think that was because Klopp was giving Newcastle a lot of respect as well. He got Endo in the team so that he had someone to try and disrupt midfield. But actually, that didn't work for them. It was when they came on. I think that Newcastle seemed to almost have that second guess of, we're 1-0 up here. If we give the ball there, it's not quite on. If we give it at that point in Liverpool break, then they could score. So I wouldn't say that's complacency. That's just losing their way a little bit.
No, okay, I'll retract that, Chris. I mean, that wasn't really the word. That was I just think it's...
It was a word. You did say complacency.
No, I said complacency.
I meant
in the kind of natural, you will just presume that when you've done that hard bit that you've got to... You know, you've almost got the game sewn up.
Yeah,
and you'll drop your energy levels a little bit.
I think it's the same with the crowd. When it's 0-0, you're playing against Liverpool, it's at home, everyone's up for it, you know, you've got those moments of controversy. It's like, it's loud, it's raucous, it's incredible. You know, you go a goal up, it's fantastic. There's a red card, that's fantastic, it's in your favour. But it absolutely changes the mood. I mean, just a little bit. And I think Chris is right, it changes the mood on the pitch a bit. It's like, oh, right, okay, so we've got ourselves into this great position. We're against 10 men. From this point, we should win. This is our game to win. And I think the bizarre thing is it puts a little bit of sort of doubt in your mind. It changes the task ahead of you. It changes the sort of tactical stuff. And I just think from that point, Newcastle, you know, I mean, I have to say, they had a huge number of chances after that. And so you do have to say it's on them that they didn't win. But that sort of bit, the bit of uncertainty from a position where you should have great certainty, because everything is going in your favour, Newcastle lost certainty, and it's amazing how often that happens.
It's mad, isn't it? It's almost like the pressure then comes off Liverpool, because everyone just thinks, well, they've done it now, they've knackered this up, and they haven't got a chance. But then the pressure goes on to Newcastle, because we have to then break them down, we have to get through them. Substitutes. George, you mentioned that before. Let's talk about those subs. A lot of people are being a little bit critical of the substitutes, when they happened and what they were. Gordon, Isak, Tonali, Jolinton, all withdrawn. Chris, did Eddie Howe get his changes wrong?
I mean, the context of the way that the game panned out, the substitutions for respective sides had a positive effect for Liverpool and a negative effect for Newcastle. That's where Liverpool essentially won the game, and that's where Newcastle, to a degree, lost it. Although I don't think it's as easy as just one or the other. It wasn't that those players came on and were the ones who necessarily made the mistakes that were culpable in causing the problems. But I do think Anthony Gordon was very tired. Much Newcastle's best outlet. He did look a bit tired, and I can understand. I know some people are saying it seemed to be that they do almost prescribed substitutions. But nobody said that when it was against Aston Villa and they came on again at a key moment and scored both, and it worked perfectly. On this occasion, it didn't. And so Howe was praised for doing it on that occasion. On this, he looked back and he sort of hinted after the game that maybe he might have done things differently, but he said I would think that in any sort of defeat. I thought Tonali was very good in parts, but also sloppy in others, as many other players were. So I think I did think Newcastle lost something when he went off, but I don't think he was as good as he was against Aston Villa, which was huge height of that performance. And it was... Joe Linton obviously seemed to be still carrying that knock to a certain extent, and Isak, as much as he'd got the red card for Van Dijk, I didn't think Isak was massively involved in everything, so I could see the logic of that change as well. It didn't work in terms of Newcastle ended up losing the game, and as I say, Liverpool's substitutions, Elliot comes on, pings a few wonderful passes, starts sending Liverpool in deep. Jota causes all sorts of problems, and then Nunez, the way he takes those two goals was just phenomenal. I mean, the amount of chances he's spurned, and he's been to St James's Park twice, essentially had three shots and scored with all three of them, and that's the difference at that sort of level. That's what Liverpool are capable of doing, and that's what Newcastle have to strive for. We still have to remember that this is still basically 18 months, really, just over 18 months into Newcastle's sort of resurgence to try and join the elite clubs. And although Liverpool have been going through a difficult spell, they have this experience of winning those tight matches, and that's the next step for Newcastle. Now that the pressure is on them a little bit more, now that they're in home games against Liverpool and you're hoping that they can win them, that's when they've got to take those chances, which they didn't, and Liverpool were clinical.
It's in the context of the Villa game, as Chris mentions, where, you know, Newcastle didn't just beat Villa, they absolutely crushed them. And the substitution played a big part in that. The first 11, you know, it's like absolutely pouring forward, absolutely kind of battering them. And then the substitutions are made, and there's more of the same. It gives Villa different problems. They're facing more energy. They're facing, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I think, you know, that is a tactic that has worked really well. It was something that was done a lot in the second half of last season. You see Wilson coming on to the pitch angry. You see those players really sort of making an impact. And so I don't think it's sort of an unreasonable thing to have done. We've had an email from Liam to the Pod on the Tyne account who says, hindsight is great in terms of the substitutions, but didn't the exact same ones kill the game off against Villa? Also, fans don't know the fitness levels, limits of certain players. And that's, yeah, it's an interesting point. I think it's the circumstances more than anything else. I don't think the substitutions were unreasonable. It's not as if Harvey Barnes and Callum Wilson and Sean Longstaff are Elliot Anderson are a downgrade on what was on the pitch. I mean, they're all good players. It just felt unstructured to me. It felt messy. It felt like no one quite knew what they were supposed to be doing. And whatever it was, it didn't work. And so in those circumstances, it feels like a failure. It's definitely a missed opportunity. It definitely is. But, again, I thought Gordon was superb. And it felt to me like he absolutely had the beating of Alexander-Arnold on that side. And so why take him off in those circumstances? But, yeah, irritating. It is irritating.
Certainly is.
There has to be a bit of perspective too.
Well, in the end, it came down to Newcastle not putting their chances away. Miguel Almiron's probably 3 inches away from goal of the season. And Alisson probably makes save of the season so far from him as well in the first half. And then we have a situation where Harvey Barnes goes through a carbon copy of the Villa scenario, but this time he fails to put the ball into Callum Wilson's path. Wilson was visibly unhappy about that, Chris. It just didn't roll, did it? But the chances were spurned. There's so many gilt-edge opportunities there. Newcastle really should have been out of sight.
There were. I mean, Almiron, sometimes you also have to... I mean, you have to remember there are two teams playing this match, and I do think in certain moments you have to credit Liverpool. You have to credit Alisson for that save in the first half from Almiron, because it was phenomenal save. The reactions to then also get up and palm it out before Newcastle player can get in. I also think for the Harvey Barnes one, as much as he should have passed it earlier, I thought when Kwanzaa came on for Liverpool, he made a huge impact because he was good on the ball and was trying to get them forward. But B, what he does in that situation, what the Liverpool players, is they basically all come across and force them to play it, to basically go into two minds as to, can I actually get the pass across? Mm. That's not defending Barnes. He should have got the ball across, but I also think you have to look at the cover and defence there. Almiron, really unlucky after ghosting through their defence, cutting inside and then hitting the post. There's the other opportunity he gets where he really snatches it and puts it into the Gallagher end, Rosette or whatever you want to call it, which was rash, and that's that was a moment Newcastle should have taken.
Yeah.
There were other openings as well where maybe the final ball wasn't right or Newcastle didn't quite get it in and around there, and they should have been further ahead than they were, and they didn't take those opportunities, and ultimately they were punished for it. But I do think some of the reaction afterwards, I think, has to remember that a little bit more. I know that NUFC.com, I think, described it as criminal that Newcastle didn't finish off the game, and I would agree with that, but I also think that you have to remember that they were in a position to have done that. It wasn't as if they're 1-0 and they didn't look like they were going to score again. They should have taken more of the opportunities than they did, and that's where the flaw was, and that's why they ended up ultimately losing to a team who, like them, are trying to push for the Champions League again this season.
Yes, and I mean, the warning signs were there, George, weren't they? Sven Botman makes an unbelievable block from Mo Salah, and then he's unlucky. A few minutes later, the ball hits him in the back, flicks up off his heel, Darwin Nunes goes through on goal, and it's suddenly 1-1. Nick Pope has no chance with that shot drilled across him.
Yeah, two great finishes, but as you say, yeah, I mean, I think the ball actually hits Botman twice in the lead-up to that, and then, of course, you know, the second goal, Liverpool's second goal is a carbon copy, except that it comes from a Newcastle mistake. Bruno giving the ball away in midfield, attempting an ambitious pass, which of course you want to see him do. But, you know, the mentality at that point, I think, is probably we just have to accept that it's not our day and come out of this with a draw, and we won't be happy with that. But, you know, and having said that, it's difficult to be too critical of, you know, of players wanting to push for the win. I think, you know, I totally agree again with Chris. I think, you know, the big moments went for Liverpool, taking away their sendings off and things like that. I mean, albeit that was deserved. But in terms of the big moments in the second half, they went for Liverpool. Nunes comes on, he has two shots, he scores two goals. There's the fantastic save from Alisson. There's Miggy hitting the post. There's Miggy moving forward. That absolutely fantastic move when he does that. But there's also that skied chance and things
chance
like that.
Chance at the back post, yeah.
Sometimes that happens. Those things happen. My sort of criticism, I think, is that I didn't ever think that Newcastle had any kind of control over the match in the second half. I mean, yes, they had chances, but it never felt to me that Newcastle are dominating here. It's like they're pouring forward and it's chance after chance after chance. Oh, we've got to take one of them. They did have a lot of chances, but it didn't come from a position of control. And this goes back to the point that they didn't quite know what to do from the position that they were in. You just felt that hesitancy. There was a hesitancy on the pitch that they just couldn't shake off. Do we push forward? How do we do it? Where do we overload? Do we press? Do we stand back? And against Aston Villa, Newcastle were absolutely and totally dominated to them. They steamrolled Aston Villa, I would say. They blitzed them. They did all those things. They never did that against Liverpool. It was like no one quite knew how to do it. Yes, you look back on the highlights and there's a huge number of chances, but actually at the time, I never felt like Newcastle were in control of the game. And I think that was the sort of failing, that whatever they did, it didn't sort of lead to that dominance. And yeah, by the time the game's going into the last few minutes, you could absolutely just see what was going to happen.
We had an interesting tweet from Jordi Kakamora, who said, do Newcastle have a mentality problem, Chris, against some of the bigger teams, or is it simply lacking the experience in those situations?
I think it's a fair point, but I think there's a few different facets to this. I think it is experience. It's learning to how to deal with those situations against the very best teams. It's the pressure of them. It's also a quality thing still. As good as Newcastle have been over the course of the last 18 months, particularly again when they were playing Man City last week, that they're not on the level of Man City yet. That's what they're aspiring to be, and therefore the tiredness that you get from Man City keeping the ball and the mental fatigue and the knowing that you have to take those opportunities, that is something which will take time, and will take time in terms of both keep continuing to bring in more quality players, but also the players that they've got learning to deal with those situations. The mentality thing, I think there is now, not a mental block, but I think there is something with Liverpool now, which is becoming with Newcastle. I mean, Eddie Howe, I think, is it 11 times he's faced Jurgen Klopp and lost on every single occasion. Newcastle have lost 5 Premier League home games under Eddie Howe. 3 of them have been against Liverpool. There was obviously the 2-1 defeat at Anfield last year, which Howe referenced, which is still in his mind. I exchanged messages with a few people inside the dressing room, a couple of whom referred to basically along the lines of, it's difficult to lose, especially to them. And I think it's this thing with Liverpool, it's everything that's around it. I mean, Howe in his pre-match press conference was asked about this, why does it seem that there's tension between the two? And he almost, in a very Eddie Howe way, was like, is there any to? And there is definite needle between, we know there's definite there needle, we know how frustrating they find Jurgen Klopp and everything he said in his little digs, and we know how frustrating Jurgen Klopp finds Jason Tindall being stood there holding his finger to his lips and basically telling him to shush when the red card happens or whenever that was in the match. I think with Liverpool, they've become a little bit of a bogey side for Newcastle, and as I say it, I'm not saying it's a mental block, but I do think that it's almost, that may be added to that again. Do we stick or twist here? What exactly do we do? We want to finally beat this side who we felt we should have beaten at least once last season, if not twice. And yeah, ultimately they came and stuck again.
There's something that I want to read out from the programme. This is only a related point because it's not quite the same, because obviously Man City are exceptional, Arsenal are exceptional, Liverpool, okay, they dipped last season, but you know, they've been an absolutely exceptional team over the past few years, and Newcastle are up there and competing with them and trying to find a way to win. You know, you look at who've beaten Newcastle at home under Eddie Howe, and it's, yeah, five defeats, three to Liverpool, is that right? Have I made that up? One to Man City, one to Arsenal. And so those are good teams. I mean, it's like, you know, is there a mentality or is it just that they may be slightly better on the day? I don't know. But anyway, this is something that Callum Wilson wrote in his programme notes. So now in the programme, there's no captain's column anymore written by Jamal Lascelles. It's the leadership group. And this time it was Callum Wilson. So I want to read this out. The wolf on top of the hill is never as hungry as the wolf climbing the hill, and you have to be the one climbing all the time. Complacency is part of human nature, but we have to have that mentality to stay hungry. Park life! And he does say that we still have to think and play like the underdogs in every game and ensure that we keep that hunger, because nothing's given, it's all earned.
It's a few mixed metaphors there.
Absolutely, yes. The wolf on top of the hill. Anyway.
Several.
But, yeah. Love Callum Wilson. But,
we also have to keep the wolf from the door as well at some point. We're going to have to do that, aren't we?
I do think it's a very interesting thing. I think this has been one of the interesting sort of stories or narratives at the start of this season. And this, you know, this definitely plays into the response to yesterday. It's like, we know Newcastle are good now.
Yeah.
All the way through last season, you go to St James's, the atmosphere is incredible. Newcastle win most of the time, but it's still like this beautiful surprise, and it's like, oh, it's incredible, it's wonderful. We now have the, and you know, a bit of this was seen last week with the Bruno response to sort of social media criticism and stuff like that, is that, you know, there is now much more of a anticipation about Newcastle winning and Newcastle being good, and how the team and how the club and how fans sort of protect that rawness and that underdog spirit that Wilson refers to whilst being a really, really good team. And I do think that's interesting. One of the fascinating things about Sir Alex Ferguson at Manchester United was how he made Manchester United almost the smallest club in the world within the confines of the dressing room. We always laughed at the stuff he said when he came out after matches talking about conspiracies and everyone has a go at us and all that kind of stuff. But he was brilliant at circling the wagons and making Man United the biggest club in the world at that point, only the size of their own dressing room. And I think a bit of Newcastle are going to have to do a bit of that. I do think that's a fascinating part of where Newcastle go next, because we know they're good. And we're now feeling irritated and frustrated that Newcastle haven't beaten Liverpool at home, albeit in quite dramatic circumstances. Yeah, anyway, it was a bit of a divergent point.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Let's finish off now with a little bit more from Eddie Howe. Here's his reflection on whether the team are getting closer to achieving results against this calibre of opposition.
As I sit here now, I can't sort of say yes for sure. I thought our performance today was very, very good, but ultimately we've lost the game, and I can't then sort of make statements like that. I feel today's a very, very difficult one for me immediately after the game to come here and talk, but I'm proud of the players in many ways for what they've delivered today. But we are kicking ourselves for sure that we didn't get something out of the game.
And if you want to read all the fabulous output from George and Chris, and of course Jacob as well, get yourselves over to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod to sign up now and pay just £1 or $1 a month, depending on where you're located, for 12 months. We'll be back in just a moment after this. So over to the women's team, cracking start to the season for the lasses. At the second time of asking, they needed extra time, but beat Burnley in the FAWNL Cup. Winning goal from Becky Ferguson and a late save from Grace Donnelly sealed a cracking result for the lasses, Chris.
Yeah, wonderful start to the season. Obviously a delayed start to the season after what we discussed happened last week. But very, very good start against a Burnley side who did well last season. And Becky Langley and the lasses are ambitious. They want to have another successful season. They're not just content with having gone up last year. And to start off with a win, that's exactly what you want.
Absolutely. Burnley as well finished third in the FAWNL Premier Division North last season, just 2 points behind the champions Nottingham Forest. And the lasses head off to Fylde on Sunday for a 2 p.m. kickoff. Their first league game after that match against Halifax was postponed. A good start for the lasses, George. It's what you want to see, isn't it? They're very ambitious this season.
Yeah, better late than never in both respects, both getting their league matches underway and then also with that match, the cup match yesterday. Very disappointing not to be there. I would have been if they hadn't been that sort of almost fixture clash with the men's team yesterday, but very much looking forward to getting to Kingston Park for the first game. For the first game there too.
Great stuff. And of course, it's the perennial Brighton away game during a train strike. And Jacob's been doing such a flawless job of filling in for Chris that he's managed to book this one off as well, George. So you're off to Brighton, is that right?
Yeah, and of course, train strikes. And so I've already had my train down to the South cancelled on Friday. So now I'm going on Thursday. And there are no trains or very few limited trains to Brighton on the Saturday. So God knows how I'm actually going to get there. My feelings of loathing and revulsion towards both Chris and Jacob, I mean, they couldn't have been much stronger than they were. But yeah, now that you've mentioned, reminded me that I've kind of put it to one side because obviously had a lot going on. But yeah, that really fills me with bile.
You see, secretly, he actually doesn't feel that way because to be prime Colkin, he actually needs these feelings of resentment towards people. So really,
true.
I'm doing you a favour.
The anger fuels him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
True. It's a big match as well, isn't it? I mean, Brighton had a poor result at the weekend, really poor result. But until that point, they've started really well. And I'm not sure that's where you want to go to sort of to bounce back because they're a very good football team. We know that. So yeah, I'll be going there with loathing, but also a slight sense of trepidation, I have to say.
Yeah, we'll have a bit more of a chat about that on Thursday, I'm sure. Yeah. But before we reach the weekend as well, it's a small matter of Newcastle United's first Champions League draw in 20 years. Athletic subscribers can join the Pod on the Tyne team in a live room. And if anyone's listened to our previous live rooms, you'll know that this will be a flawless experience, not at all fraught with technical difficulties. This Thursday for the Champions League draw from 5 p.m. UK time. Under discussion will be Newcastle's impending return to action in Europe's Premier competition. Confirmation of our group fixtures with potential destinations including Paris, Madrid, Milan, Rome, Munich, Dortmund, Belgrade, and many more. Plus, there's a few side issues as well. The summer transfer window 2023. How well's it gone? Could Sven Botman's injury v Liverpool prompt another foray into the transfer market?
Yeah, I mean, I asked that to Howe after the match yesterday. Obviously, very concerning to see your main centre-half limp off like that. Such a good player. I mean, he was not forthcoming, but then Eddie Howe really is. It was like, yeah, we think it's an ankle injury. We'll see what's what. And, won't make any commitments to the transfer market until he's discussed it with his medical team. Now, Jacob was actually in the sort of dugout area after the match, hanging around like a bad smell. And, Botman came out. He wasn't wearing a protective boot. He wasn't on crutches or anything like that. He was walking, albeit a bit gingerly. So hopefully, that's not a medical diagnosis by any stretch, but it wasn't serious enough for him to be, to be doing those things. So that's good. So fingers crossed, he'll be okay. It would be a concern because it's, albeit on the left side, Dan Burn could move in there. It's not a position where Newcastle do have the strength that they have in other areas of the pitch. So yeah, I'm sure they'll monitor it. They don't want to be going into the market because they already feel like they've pushed things and Hull's arrival has been pushed back to next summer in terms of permanent transfer. So, but we'll just have to see what's what.
In terms of that, I mean, Lewis Hall arriving means that if Botman was out for a period, then he, in theory, could play a left back and Byrne could go into left side centre back. You obviously got Matt Target who came on. You have Livermento who could play both sides. Same with Trippier if you really had to. But right sided centre back would have been the other position, or at least centre back would have been the other position Newcastle would have looked to strengthen this summer if they could have done. For all the reasons we've previously discussed, that's proven too difficult to do. And it will probably be a very difficult deal to do again for those FFP reasons George mentioned in terms of how Newcastle stretch themselves. But I think that it will depend on the severity of Botman's injury. If it is sort of long term, given his importance to Newcastle, given the balance that there was in terms or has been with him and Cher, then that may cause a little bit of a rethink. But I'd say that at this stage, it's probably looking unlikely.
Yeah, with the Champions League on the horizon, the squad depth will be key, of course, and the transfer window slamming shut at the end of the week. There have been one or two other developments. Ryan Fraser has joined Southampton on loan, George, and Isaac Hayden and Jeff Hendrick are still hanging around at the moment, aren't they? Any update on their situations?
So Isaac Hayden has been targeted by Luton, so we may see some developments there imminently. Yeah, Ryan Fraser. I mean, just one of the kind of great enigmas of the past kind of couple of years at Newcastle. When he came here at the same time as Callum Wilson, you sort of thought that, you know, that would be a match made in heaven. Really looked forward to sort of seeing him driving down the wing. But A, it hasn't worked out. And then B, there's been that very strange thing where Eddie Howe moves him to train with the kids because he didn't feel the commitment was right. I mean, that's really disappointing. I mean, players like, you know, Isaac Hayden would have loved to have been involved, didn't cause problems when he wasn't, you know, could see the value in what was happening at the club and just didn't sort of fit into the manager's plans. Fraser had a chance to be part of the plans and sort of rejected it. So not disappointed to see him go. I just think he is one of the very few that just hasn't bought into what happened at Newcastle. Very strange. Howe gave players like Hayden the chance to come back, but it would have been to train with the under-18s or the under-23s, and he didn't have a house up here anymore, so didn't see much value in that. So he stayed down south to keep himself fit. We'll see what happens to him. But yeah, obviously, if he goes, it will certainly be with my best wishes.
Absolutely. Cathal Heffernan becomes the second Irish teenager assigned this summer as well after goalkeeper Reece Byrne. This one's been bobbling around for a little while, hasn't it, Chris? It's good to finally get Cathal in.
Yeah, fascinating one as well. Another strengthening of the under-21 squad. A lot of development players have arrived. He's had a very interesting pathway already. Went from Cork City to AC Milan. So the second player Newcastle signed from AC Milan this summer after, obviously, Sandro Tonali. Different stage of his career, but a centre-back, 18-year-old, who seems having a bright future. So, yeah, continuing trying to bolster the under-21s to make sure that really is strong and can really supplement the first team going forward and add to that squad depth you mentioned.
Absolutely, and another couple of loans involving younger players as well. Jay Turner-Cook will spend a season in the SPL with St Johnstone, and Cameron Ferguson, otherwise known as Duncan Ferguson Jr., heads to Fofar. Let's hope he doesn't get burgled at any point while he's there. Right, that's it, just about. Tune in on Thursday for all of that live room nonsense, plus Liam Tharn's not-so-secret plan on how to be Brighton. Do get in touch as well. We're all on Twitter, as is the show, at PodOnTheTyne. And if you're not on Twitter, you can email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. That's it. Unfortunately, chaps, we didn't quite do it against Liverpool. A little bit of a disappointing result after a bright start. But thank you very much for joining us today, Chris Woff. Lovely to have you.
Well, I preferred AI Culkin to the actual Culkin, but, you know, we'll muddle through in the end with him here.
Yeah, well, I preferred not having any interactions with you at all last week. But, you know, we can't always get what we want, can we? I would like to say that, you know, I do think as we come to an end of the show, I think last night I felt really irritated and frustrated. I had that sort of tension in my shoulders after the match. Really, yeah, really. But I think taking a step back this morning, I feel disappointed, but I don't feel disheartened. I think there is actually a lot to take from that match. I think, you know, the game management, we've praised Newcastle for their game management over the past year, past 18 months. It didn't work yesterday. Perhaps they haven't quite got that against the biggest teams yet, but they should have beaten Liverpool. That's not a bad thing to say, though, is it? Yeah. They should have beaten Liverpool, and it'll come.
Absolutely. I was on the metro back from the town last night, and nothing had been said since we left the game, and my son just turned to me around about Felon metro station and said, "Are you okay, Dad? You're very red." And I was. So that's it. Thanks very much for listening. From everybody at Pod on the Time, from myself and, of course, George and Chris, we'll be back on Thursday with that live room. We'll speak to you very, very soon. Take care. Goodbye.
I can see clearly now the rain is gone.
Athletic.